Welcome, Dr. Jack Killen, to our series of Conversations with David. Our exciting and even profound topic today is the roots of emotion and the Enneagram. Jack is Acting Director, Deputy Director, National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. He has been studying the Enneagram for over 12 years. In 2004, he was certified in the narrative tradition in our Enneagram Professional Training Program, now celebrating its 20th anniversary. He's pursued extensive additional study, and with his partner, Fred Boykin, now regularly teach the Enneagram together and also use it in their counseling work with individuals, couples, and groups, and are active in the Washington, D.C. Enneagram community. Furthermore, Jack is the immediate past president of the Association of Enneagram Teachers in the Narrative Tradition. He's keenly interested in the intersection of neuroscience, developmental and adult psychology, and spirituality, and he's been working with Dr. Daniel Siegel, myself, my daughter Denise Daniels, a developmental psychologist, and Laura Baker, a behavioral geneticist, on a project aimed at presenting the Enneagram to the scientific audience in a contemporary psychological and neurobiological framework. He lives in Silver Spring, Maryland, with his partner and their three cats, who have been wonderful teachers on the nature of mammalian emotional systems. So let's now turn to our topic on the profound importance and core function of emotions in mammals, special emphasis on the relationship to the Enneagram and our path of development. So Jack, welcome to the program, and how did you get interested in the topic of emotion in mammals?
You know, I got interested in the topic through my interest in the Enneagram, probably the first thread, and a couple of threads came together. One major thread was sort of working with the teachings and learning to find all this emotional understuff going on beneath the surface of what I was aware of and learning how to work with it. I also, you know, as you mentioned, come from another thread is that I come from a science background, and there was just a big part of me that was like, what's going on here? What is the biology of this stuff all about? There's clearly a lot going on, and it's biological, and what is it? And the other part, maybe it's type-related thing in me about wanting to find the common ground, help do something to bridge what's a big communication gap, and I think, between science and contemporary mental health work and the Enneagram.
So what specifically got you really interested in this emotions in mammals? And how does that all relate to the Enneagram?
As you mentioned in the introduction, several of us have been working on a project to try to map map the Enneagram onto contemporary science. In the course of that, I met. This is sort of one person led to another thing. I met Dan Siegel, who introduced me really to sort of fundamentals of neurobiology. Our work together sort of began to craft a model. Our work as a group, the group that you mentioned, began to craft a model. I also became extremely interested in attachment, and I wound up at a attachment conference at UCLA about a year and a half ago, which was on the subject of emotions, and suddenly a framework for understanding mammalian emotion presented itself to me, and I began to see what I think are striking and obvious parallels, what we know and have learned from our study of the Enneagram. So it was sort of a string of circumstances, kind of propelled by my intellectual desire to make sense of it all.
Right, and as I understand it, these three very fundamental basic emotions in all mammals, called fear, rage, and panic, in the Enneagram we might call them fear, anger, and distress, but I'd like to hear what you've discovered about these three basic emotions that have a very core positive value in our lives.
Right, right. Well, maybe it would be useful to back up a step and talk for just a second about mammals in general. Mammals have some very interesting and really important distinguishing features. Probably the most important in them is the capacity of their brains to encode emotion into memory. And the second of the two most important things would be that mammals provide their young with a period of protection where learning can happen, and their brains are particularly adept at learning. The mammalian brain comes equipped with a set of seven, so far, that's what is known, seven emotional systems that are sort of wired in and there because they have been beneficial in the course of evolution. Among the systems are three that we can say have a kind of a negative or an aversive affective quality to them. Yak Pongsep, who is the primary source of most of the knowledge that I've acquired about this subject, describes these three emotional systems as you mentioned, fear, rage, and panic. Each of them, as I indicated, have a kind of an aversive state, and they each have very important qualities in promoting survival. Fear system.
They're experienced negatively, but they have very positive core value.
The fear system, for instance, is a system that is designed to alert you to imminent danger. So the animal becomes attuned and the senses open wide, and it basically says alert, alert, danger, danger, Will Robinson is kind of a but it's happening at an emotional level. It says something is bad here. Your safety is in danger. That's what the fear system is designed to do, is to raise that alarm bell. The rage system raises a different kind of an alarm bell. It's an alarm bell that is go after what you need, or you can get away from limitation. So imagine a predator coming at you. You don't have a way out. Rage is the rage response that energizes offensive behavior in the interests of the pursuit of things that you need,
right,
like freedom or basic needs.
Yeah, and it also tells you when the world isn't the way you want it to be. It's not right. It's interfering with what you feel you need, want, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. In experimental systems, in simpler brains than the human brain, the things that provoke it are limitation in some way or another, or provocation. The panic system is a system that also raises an aversive state in the baby mammal that says contact, life-sustaining contact with particularly mother, but caregivers in general. Life-sustaining contact is lost. I need attention now.
That fundamental connection.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the helpless little, the archetypal image here is the lost little animal taken away from its mother. So if you've ever brought a puppy or a cat home, a kitten home for the first time, you know that that wailing is an expression of this system saying my connection to my life-sustaining social connection has been disrupted. I need attention now.
All three of these are in all mammals. And
that's right, yes.
As I understand it, depend a lot upon the brainstem functions where there's anger and fear and the limbic system, that all three of them are what we would consider, quote, primitive, unquote, because they're there, they're rooted, they're deeply rooted in all mammals and to some extent, at least partly in the reptiles.
Yeah. We can't make this all completely black and white that it's all mammals and no reptiles. There certainly is fear and anger in reptiles, no question about that. In many animals, those probably exist. Pongsep talks about the fact that systems of care and social attachment have arisen probably several times in evolution. So you see it in birds, for instance. But yes, these three systems plus four others that have more positive or pleasant affective states are very primal, and they include connections sort of at all levels of the nervous system through the brain and even into the body, so that often we experience emotion in our bodies rather than in our heads. Literally, we experience them as body-centered phenomena.
Right. Well, before we go into some more depth about these three fundamental ones, the aversive ones, could you describe the other four that are basic to all mammals also?
Yes. Part of, as we mentioned before, part of the mammalian, the distinguishing feature of mammals is this attachment or bonding between a caregiver, usually mother, and infant. So on the parent side of that equation or relationship is a system called care, and it is essentially, the embodiment here is the mother-child bond. Archetypal image might be the mother holding the newborn baby, gazing into its eyes, or the things that we hear all the time about the intensity of the mother-child bond. That's the expression of this emotional system. It's designed to ensure that the parents are utterly devoted to their offspring for the time that they are needed to raise them and teach them, and in which they can learn and become physically and socially functional. So that's care.
Right.
There's a system called play, which is very fascinating. It's an emotional system, and simply put, it's the emotional system that makes play fun. Play serves a extremely important variety of functions in learning. Little children learn motor skills. They learn how to relate to each other. They learn ways in which they can trust and not trust other people. They learn to test their emotional reactions in social situations, learn all kinds of things in play. And one of the genius things about evolution is that it has given that act a delightful, that act of learning, a sense of delight and giddiness and joy. So the manifestation here is the giddiness of little kids playing in the playground. It's fun and happy and pleasant, and what it's doing is providing them with a very powerful incentive for learning. There's another system that's called seeking, and has a similar quality to it, but different from play, also a positive affective state that is one characterized by anticipatory excitement, eagerness, especially as needs or desires are about to be satisfied. So it propels exploration, and it particularly is important because of this sense of happiness that arises when something you really want is about to happen.
You know, this is the one I've called for years, the exploratory instinct, or and some people would even call the creative one, and you can't stop little kids from just wanting to get into everything.
Right, everything. Right. Yeah, yeah. I that's part of it. And the sort of the delight of exploration is similar in quality to play, but it's different. So I think of this. Here's one example of where my cats have taught me. The cat playing with the ball on the floor, the kitten batting something around, and, you know, and the rough and tumble play that they get into has a different emotional quality to it than the cat exploring, you know, the curiosity. And this emotional system is more about the curiosity and exploration and delight in seeking.
Right. So now you've described three of these, seeking and play.
Right.
And care. Well, what's the fourth?
The fourth one is, in Pongsep's terminology, is called lust. This is not the Enneagram concept of lust. This is the sort of the more classical concept of lust. This one is largely about sex and the sexual drives and the things that make us behave the way we behave in and around sex. It has differences in male and female, but it's fundamentally the driver, the emotional component of it is fundamentally the driver that makes us want to pursue sexual activities. Has some interesting qualities to it, most important of which is kind of the disconnect between the pleasure that we're seeking and the fact that the reason that exists is to help ensure that we procreate and make more of ourselves.
Right, right.
So
before we return to the three basic emotions of fear or
rage and
stress and
panic,
anger or rage, what about emotions like shame, guilt, remorse?
Right,
how
right.
How does that play a role?
Right. So this is not the entire emotional palette. These systems are the systems that biologists have been able to identify that exist in all mammals and that are anatomically similar and so forth. There's a whole palette of emotion that humans experience, at least. You mentioned a few, and there's many others, of course. It's likely that those are more learned emotions, and it's probably useful to think of the seven systems or so. One way I think of them is as the primary colors, if you will.
Right,
but
certainly, Jack, little children, little toddlers don't have shame. You know, they just love to run around naked and just want to be into everything. They don't have guilt. I mean, that's what you mean by being learned.
Yeah, yeah. Those emotions are much more learned. But certainly shame and guilt, for instance, have very clear direct relationships to the quality of attachment with our caregivers or the people that we care about in our lives or our social structure, so that there is some connection to care and panic probably in them. That's why I like to think of the seven as sort of the primary colors, but the ability of the human brain to make, think, do, you know, creates the ability to have a much richer emotional life than just these seven systems. These seven systems, though, are innate and very hardwired, and we can find them in all mammals.
Well, I'd like to return to the three basics and start perhaps with the fear one and how that relates in the Enneagram, because it seems to me like these three do relate to the three centers of intelligence. The fear relating, of course, to the head triad, or being more salient there, the rage or anger to the body triad, and to the panic or distress to the heart triad. And explore that with you.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot here that's particularly profound, except that I think I was struck when I heard this framework for thinking about emotions and heard about Panksepp's work and heard about the nature of these emotional systems by the very obvious and direct parallels between those three centers of intelligence in the Enneagram. Fear, of course, is fear. Rage is anger. And panic in the heart center is not a word that we use in Enneagram thinking, but the quality of that center is very much one about I need attention.
Well, and it's also about the huge distress that you feel when you mm-hmm. don't have connection.
Yeah, that's when I say I need attention, it's because I don't feel connected. I have found the understanding of these systems to be very helpful to me in reducing to a lot more clarity what the emotional quality or the emotional energy of the three centers is about. Fear is pretty clear. It's, I am in danger here, or something is going to go wrong.
Right, and you don't want to have this feeling, so you develop one of the three strategies of the three types
mm-hmm.
in that center. And, of course, all of us have all the strategies to some degree. It's just that in one of these centers becomes more salient. Perhaps it's genetics, perhaps it's some environment, or both.
Can we come back to that in just a moment? That the interesting and important thing about the human situation is that humans can think ahead. They can conceptualize abstractly. They can project into the future. And maybe where fear in the mammalian system, in quote lower mammals, fear is meant to arise, sort of flush through, create a response, and then dissipate. Humans can manufacture fear out of situations where fear is not appropriate because of our ability to think and project and abstract. So that's where the human Enneagram situation becomes, I think, more complicated in our description of what fear is about. But the fundamental emotional quality under it is this quality of danger, danger, danger.
So how do you see the three strategies of the three head types?
Now we're getting into speculation on my part. So what we've been talking about up to now is pretty much very, very well grounded in science. Then the question, if you know and understand the Enneagram, is, okay, so what are these three different types related to that emotional system? The speculation on my part, and it's pure speculation, is that there are, in this case, three basic skill sets that a human needs in order to navigate the terrain of fear. One of them is to prepare for engagement, is how I've been phrasing it. In other words, prepare to fight, get ready. That would correspond with point six. Be on the lookout, get ready, arm yourself. Another strategy that we need for dealing appropriately with fear is lay low. Be on the lookout, observe, watch. It corresponds in many ways to the freeze response, which is look out, observe,
and
very careful here.
Pull back and avoid,
hide. Hide is what animals are really trying to do. Part of what they're really trying to do in the freeze response is to blend into the background. which is what 5, of course, in many ways is about. And then the other obvious thing that you need to do with fear is to be able to overcome it, to either get out of Dodge, if you will, or to have confidence and to know in yourself that you can take care of it. And those seem to me to be qualities that are associated with type 7.
I would just add to that that there's escape into something positive. You don't have to, you can get away from the fear. There'll be a positive, new opportunity, a new venture, a new adventure, and so forth.
Yeah. So I see that as you need to be able, humans also need to be able to look at situations where there is fear and say, I don't need to be afraid here, which is a variation on the finding a positive in it, or I can get out of Dodge if I need to.
Finding good reasons not to have the fear.
Yeah, exactly.
Not to have it.
Yeah, exactly. So those three skill sets seem to me to be what the Enneagram teaches us, at the very least to be what the Enneagram teaches us about navigating the terrain of fear, understanding that it's a kind of a biological thing that's in us, and if it becomes an important way of our relating to the world, then those three skill sets are the skill sets that we need in order to be socially functional beings.
Right. Let's move on to the rage or anger triad.
Yeah. So once again, the rage system is the system that's intended to arouse offensive or defensive action and is precipitated by provocation of some kind or limitation. I really found this understanding of, quote, anger, as we talk about it in the Enneagram, to be intensely clarifying to me, and to just really resonate with my life experience. So I have a real personal engagement around this system because it's so close to my type. But I feel it really does help me to understand the concept of anger in a way that has not been so clear to me in all of my study over 12 years of the Enneagram and my relationship to anger. So that's one point that I would make about it.
For the nines, it's, in quotes, a kind of seeming surrender. You're not going to oppose things, at least not overtly.
Yeah.
And so, kind of go along and get along.
Yeah, so let's then talk, like we did for just a second, about the three skill sets that one needs to navigate the terrain of rage. One of them is, and this is particularly important in the context of a dependent relationship, you need to know when to fold them, when to surrender, when to yield, when to give in, allow the other to take charge of the situation. That's a skill set that everybody needs.
Of course, I always tease you and other nines, and especially my long-term cherished relationship. I mean, it's seeming surrender.
Yes. So what you're talking about is the expression of that in type, and what I'm talking about right now is sort of a step before that, about a skill set that we need to deal functionally in a social way with the uprisings of rage.
Yes, I get what you're saying.
So you're absolutely right, and I completely agree with you. Where we take these skill sets in the development of type is exactly parallel to all of our teachings and everything. We overdo it. Before that point, one of the skill sets we need is we need to surrender sometimes. Another skill set we need, of course, is to go for it. Something's in my way, you know, get out of my way. I'm going to get what I want.
Right, and guess what type that is?
Yeah, and that's, of course, type 8. And the other skill set that we need with this energy is to discipline it, particularly because we're social beings. We live in relationship. Always, virtually everybody, always everywhere is living in relationship in a society or a situation that includes relationships with other people. We need discipline for this emotion, and that, to me, speaks to what the one approach is about.
Just to mention the names of these, the eight, the assertive type that goes after, is called the protector or assertive.
Mm-hmm.
The nine, the seeming surrender, and that skill to be able to go along and get along.
Mm-hmm.
And is we call the mediator or peacemaker, and the one, of course, is called the perfectionist that tries to discipline oneself and do what's right.
Right, right. So sometimes, you know, sometimes when rage arises, you need to say, well, okay, but the rules of my society are, I can't run amok here. And when you look at many mammalian social animals, they have social rules. And you see disciplining going on. And discipline is an important part of what our parents do with us. So that's the rage system.
Good. Well, let's move on to the panic distress system.
Right. That would, of course, correspond with types 2, 3, and 4. Once again, here, the emotional energy that's coming up, the aversive emotional energy, this emotion called panic, it's an alarm bell, as you indicated, that is being set off because I'm perceiving a lack of necessary social attachment or connection.
You can really see this in little children that have lost their way in a store and lost that connection. That the it's like a scream of it. Literally is a panic.
Yes, it is, and that's the archetypal image here, is the little child lost from its parents, disconnected, and it's urgent. And what it's designed to do, and its very purpose, is to raise alarm in caregivers, and particularly the mother and father, but other caregivers also. It's intended to raise alarm and say, this little one needs me immediately, and to arouse distress in caregivers. So that's how this system is working and how it's operating. As we go through life, we need several skill sets for dealing with this lack of, if you will, connection.
Don't want to feel any of these three emotions for any length of time, panic,
right.
Panic, rage, or fear.
Right. Right. So what can we do when we feel panic? Well, one thing that little children learn to do is that they learn to do new things. They take a first step, and it creates delight. They achieve something new. They cross a milestone. They do something novel. They perform well in a song. You get feedback. You get instantaneous feedback and connection.
On the screen, they won't leave me now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's a skill set that we develop.
And that's what we call type 3, right?
And that would correspond with type 3.
Performer or motivator.
Right, right. Another thing that we can do is we can be sweet. That gets attention like nobody's business. The image that I have in my head right this moment is one of our cats, I think is a 2, you know. He comes up and he cuddles up next to you and starts purring, and it's like, okay, I will give you attention. But you can imagine the little child coming up and cuddling up next to mommy.
It's a lot of giving what you'd like to get for yourself.
Exactly. It's another way of achieving that. It's fundamentally the strategy of type 2.
Right, just meet the needs of others and they'll meet yours. And, of course, type 2 we call the helper or giver.
Right. The other strategy, of course, is to find ways to call attention to yourself, quote, positively, or by some ways raising distress in other people.
Right, exhibiting longing or a kind of distress, or calling out for evoking concern.
Right, right, and exactly, in some way. And that would correspond in a general way with what we see in type 4.
Right, which we like to call the romantic. To bring some conclusion to all this, let's return to how important these basic emotions are and how inescapable they are in human development and human beings, and how we really need to work with these.
The fundamental theory that our our group of five has developed here is that one of these approaches becomes most salient in our early life.
These emotions are pretty well, as you said, hardwired. It seems to me that these are just vitally important to understand, to be able to experience them without acting on them, to be able to not run away from them, to know that these arise, and to be able to do the inquiry work. Is this really dangerous, or am I really threatened about losing
right.
someone, or is this really something I need to have for myself?
Right, exactly.
Knowing that you're never going to get rid of these emotions, you don't want to do that, but not so that they don't dominate you and control you.
Certainly, that's what we do when we really engage deeply in Enneagram work. First of all, we learn to identify that these things are going on. Whether or not we know the names of them and so forth is less important. From a neurobiological standpoint, they are definitely very hardwired. The reactivity that we experience in type is probably coming from these hardwired innate systems.
This fundamentalness of these emotions and their relationship to the three centers of intelligence and to our habits of mind seem to me to be profoundly important to understand and to work with. So I would just ask any other concluding comment that you might have, Jack.
I do think it's important and profound and deep and illuminating and makes important contributions to our study of the Enneagram and also perhaps to opening the Enneagram up to wider acceptance as a really powerful tool for understanding human nature.
Yes, and it does show how connected type is to our neurobiology. Here's these three, just using the three fundamental aversive emotions, they're related to the Enneagram centers of intelligence. There's a neurobiology that connects up, and it's a way of validating the Enneagram.
It is, it is. This congruence of several lines of inquiry to me is really exciting. I love it that completely independent lines of inquiry here come together in a way that makes a lot of sense in both languages from both perspectives. It lends credibility to both.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Jack, for coming on for these conversations with David, and I very much appreciate what you're contributing, and thank you so much.
Thank you, David. I really enjoyed it.